welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, and this is the parenting podcast with a difference. I had a little week off over half term, and also Leo had a little op in Alder Hey. God, the general anaesthetic's a bit rough, isn't it? I think more mentally than physically. Like, he was absolutely fine, but I was so anxious in the run-up. It was like a planned surgery. I don't know if you're the same, if your kids have ever had to have surgery. This is like our seventh date of trying to get it done because he just kept being sick all the time and then they wouldn't do it. So anyway, he has been such a brave boy. I'm so proud of him. Everyone at Alder Hey, as always, was unbelievable. Well, I say everyone. By that, I mean the people that were taking care of him, like before and afterwards. I will say this, slightly problematic language around Down syndrome from the surgeon, which was a little disappointing. And in a different situation, I might have kind of maybe said something, but I was so up the wall. I was like, okay, I'm going to let this one go. In other news, we have had the educational psychologist report back who went in to see Leo in school. And it's a hard read, isn't it? Have you gone through the EHCP process? I know that loads of people who listen to this podcast are a little bit further along the journey than me, so you might have done. And it said everything we needed it to say. She said lots of lovely things in there as well about how polite he was and how sociable he is. But there was one bit. Now, when Leo started to have physio, I don't know if this is the same with your kids, if they've had physio. Initially, they were like, right, this is the age he's kind of comparable to, you know, for what he's doing. And quite quickly, I said to them, would you mind not telling me that? Because it's not making me feel good. And I don't need to know that. I understand that maybe they do, but I don't need to. And they were like, that's absolutely fine. And nobody's ever mentioned that since. But I guess this is one of those situations where they have to write this in a report. And it was like, you know, this is the age that he's kind of compared to. And it was quite different to the age that he is. And that, for me, was quite difficult to read. I'm sure I'm not alone in that. Those reports in black and white, they can just get you sometimes, can't they? And that threw me for a little bit. But anyway, I think it's good to share those things. Good to share the highs and the lows. That's what this podcast is all about. And this week, I am delighted with the guest that I have got on, because this is a conversation that I recently had with my friend Sam. Now, Sam is a friend that I have met since having Leo, and her little boy Theo, who is gorgeous. He's a little bit older than Leo, and he also has Down syndrome. That's how we met, but we're friends because she's just really cool and really nice. Now, you'll hear this in this conversation, but although me and Sam both have children with Down syndrome, our journeys and our stories and our experiences of that differ in quite a lot of ways. Sam is a single mum, and also Theo did have to have heart surgery after he was born. So we talk about both of those things, and we also talk about the school application process and how it didn't really go the way that Sam wanted. So she has decided to home educate, which I am absolutely in awe of anybody who does that. Don't love the reasons why she had to make that decision, but I love the fact that she's fully on board with it. So we talk about that. We talk about her worries, her hopes, because she hasn't started yet. So this will start from, well, the school year, I guess, in September. So I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. I certainly enjoyed having it. Here we go. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Gemma.
Me and you were both a bit nervous about this one because you are my friend. And for some reason, now I'm like, oh, this is, like, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing now.
That's how I feel. But it's like, it's a weird one. It's like, I'm comfortable because I do know you, but it's still like, oh.
I know. It's a weird one, isn't it? Yeah. So let's just start by talking about how we met. So I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, I don't really engage at the minute too much with specific things like kind of Down syndrome events, I suppose. I don't know why, really. I just don't. And that's fine. Some people, you know, go all in. Some people don't go in at all. But there was a really lovely event. Was it about 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was now. Yeah, 2 years.
God, that's gone quick. So yeah, there was a gorgeous event. And it was with Down Syndrome Liverpool in this beautiful space called, it's Sudley Gardens, isn't it? Sudley Ward Garden. And we ended up meeting at that, and it was nice because I have always said, and I know that you're the same, Sam, like, I don't want to be friends with somebody and hang out with somebody just because their child has Down syndrome. Like, I want to be friends with people and hang out with people because I like them. And I feel like we clicked, and it was really nice. It's a bonus then that we can then go, okay, well, we can chat to each other about our children and you get it and I get it. And that's also nice.
Definitely, definitely. And like, that kind of click is what's really necessary. I'm very much the same, Gemma. Like, as much as I'm an advocate and I love the Down syndrome community, I'm not just going to be friends with people just for the sake of it. Like, friendship is a whole different thing to just like knowing people in your community. So I do feel quite blessed that we met each other on that day.
I was thinking that because I thought just before you came on, I was thinking, would our paths have crossed had we not had our children? And although we live quite close to each other, I don't think I've ever seen you before. So probably not.
Same, I know. And you're a radio celebrity as well, Jem, but like
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a blessing in that way that, you know,
no, absolutely. And I was also thinking that although our sons both have the same diagnosis, our journeys and our children are very different. And it kind of emphasizes that fact. Like, we talk about this all the time on the podcast, like, no two journeys are the same, but they actually aren't, are they?
At all. You know, we go to the Down Syndrome Liverpool group on a Saturday as well. And one of the dads just said that he was like, you meet one person with Down syndrome, you've met one person with Down syndrome. You know, it's lovely because like the camaraderie means that we understand each other's journey that bit more when you do have a child with special needs or, you know, a child with Down syndrome. But yeah, our boys are like just as cute as each other, but are very, very different people.
And also what I think's interesting is you've mentioned to me before, because you do listen to the podcast all the time, which I love, thank you. But the things that have really resonated with you that you've mentioned to me from the podcast haven't been from people talking about Down syndrome at all. They've been from episodes that you wouldn't necessarily have thought that you'd be like, oh my God, I feel like you're talking about me or talking to me.
Yeah, that's been really interesting. That's what this podcast is amazing, Gemma, because I didn't realise from other people. Like, you know, there's been parents on here who spoke about the journey with their child with a heart condition, and my son has a heart condition. And I didn't realise how much of the medical stuff has been the bigger part of the journey with my son, Theo, than just having Down syndrome, you know, saying that in a kind of flippant way. But it's like, yeah, Down syndrome is a diagnosis, but it really doesn't define the individual the same as every other individual, because, yeah, you can have different medical conditions, you can have different challenges, different strengths. And that's what I've found by listening to your podcast. It's like there's so many people who've gone through things in their journey that I can 100% resonate with.
Now, I obviously know Theo. Tell me, well, not tell me because I know, but tell everyone listening a little bit about Theo.
So my little Theo was born in 2021. So, you know, I was pregnant in the pandemic, and that was a bit mad in itself. But yeah, I found out when I was 14 weeks pregnant that he may have a heart condition. So that meant that through the journey of pregnancy, that was always at the back of my mind. But I didn't know that he had Down syndrome. I could have checked, I could have done an amnio, but I didn't. I just wanted to try and enjoy the pregnancy as much as possible because I already had this whole heart condition thing over my head. So when he was born, it was amazing. It was hard, of course, but it was amazing. And I found out 3 days later that he did have Down syndrome. They did the tests. And at that point in time, I wasn't really too fussed about it. I just kind of wanted to get into motherhood, but I'm going a bit too far with that story in terms of me just telling you who Theo is right now. He's a gorgeous 4-year-old boy who's at nursery school at the moment. He's still very much pre-verbal, but does say a few words. But he loves to run. He loves to climb and jump and play football and watch his favourite shows. He loves being in familiar spaces and his family, but he really loves numbers and letters and joining things together and lining things up in a row. And he enjoys laughter. Anything that's going to make him laugh or he thinks is funny, we always have to engage in those things. And his laugh is just, and his smile's just so infectious. He's a gorgeous, gorgeous little boy. Lots of love in his heart.
He is gorgeous. So let's go back then to when you found out about the heart condition. I always really feel for anyone who got a diagnosis in pregnancy, because I feel like it must take the edge off being able to just relax and enjoy being pregnant.
Yeah, definitely. You know, finding out I was pregnant was a surprise in the first place. So it was a lovely surprise, because I don't mind sharing. I am a mum in my 40s, and I did get pregnant in my 40s. So that was a lovely surprise. So you go through that whole, you want to get to that first 3 months and just know that everything's okay. And then you get to that scan and it's like, oh gosh, no, they're saying it's not okay. So that was really, really disheartening. Because you're just thinking of the size of a fetus, which we still don't really know the size of a fetus at that age. And you're just thinking, how do you know there's a hole in that tiny, tiny little living organism's heart? It's just like, I didn't want to believe it. So I kind of was in denial for a bit. I was like, okay, you're telling me to come in for the scans like every month to make sure he's progressing okay. But you're saying he's got a hole in his heart. I'll believe you for now. That's how I took it, to be honest, because otherwise I think it would have been so horrible, and I really just wanted to enjoy being pregnant. So that's why after a couple of scans and then saying, you know, the type of hole in the heart that we think it is, we do find it in children with Down syndrome, but we also find it in children without Down syndrome. So I was like, well, that is so 50-50. I don't feel I'm going to want to do an amnio just based off the back of that, because I was just so happy to be pregnant. I was like, this is my chance to be a mum. I don't want to scupper it. And I know for some people it's really important to have an amnio, but for me at that point, it just really wasn't. I was like, okay, he may well have this serious heart condition. They were saying it was, but we'll manage it and we'll get there. So I think as time went on and he got bigger and they could clearly see there was this difference in his heart, that was something that was always at the back of my mind. But I think part of it was very hard because we were in lockdown, you know, sometimes through that time. So had to spend a lot of time at home doing nothing, you know, on my own. But part of that also meant I was just seeing myself grow, seeing my baby grow inside me. So that was a beautiful thing. I was like, wow, it seems like there's something wrong with his heart, but he's still growing and he's going to get there. But it was very tough because every time I did go for a scan, they weren't too sure. They were like, it could be touch and go. So I kind of had to put myself in a different space in my mind to be like, okay, my babe, they tell me my baby might not make it, but I can't think that way. I've just got to think he's decided to come to this world. So I want to make sure he gets there after the 9 months. So that's where I just put myself in a different mind frame.
And is that what they said to you, that he might not make it?
Yeah, it's like it was a very difficult one. They could see that this hole was like a central hole. It's something called an AVSD. But as time went on, they also saw it was an extra condition called tetralogy of Fallot. It's very difficult for the heart to keep the body oxygenated. And but they kept on checking. They were trying to see, because they were like, pretty sure he may have Down syndrome. But some of the other markers when you're checking for a fetus are like, you know, shorter limb lengths and stuff like that, and other issues possibly with other organs. But, you know, Theo, he's still very tall now, but it seems like he's always had those longer limbs, even as a fetus. So they couldn't detect anything else. And to be honest, I'd joined like a peer group called Tiny Tickers, who are a heart charity that are absolutely amazing. And to be honest, a lot of the other children that I read about that had an AVSD didn't have Down syndrome. So still in the back of my mind, I was like, it could be either way. But, you know, a lot of kids do have this heart condition and it's not the case. I just, at that point in time, because I'd heard Down syndrome a few times, not loads of times, but a few times, I was still in denial. And of course, I'm not going to lie, I didn't want him to have Down syndrome. It's like, I don't want him to have anything else that's going to make his life harder. It seems like he's already got a heart condition. But at the same time, I just felt so blessed I was able to be a mum. I was going to take my child however he was going to come. I put all the other things in the back of my mind until he actually came. I just focused on him getting here safely.
So around 60% of children with Down syndrome do then need heart surgery for a heart condition. I don't know if it's exactly 60, but it's certainly around 60. Yeah. And Theo did need the surgery, didn't he?
He did. And that was the hard part. When he actually got to a size, you know, 6-7 months, they were like very, very sure, and we could see this hole in his heart. they were saying between 3 and 6 months he'd have to have open heart surgery. And I was like, gosh, newborn babies are so small. That was the scariest thing ever to have to consider. So once he did get here and, you know, you have all the jubilation of having a child out, it just dawned on me, oh my gosh, you're going to have to open up my child. And that was the scariest thing ever. So he had to have, like, obviously he was a cardiology patient straight away, and he had to have appointments like every month just to check the updates. But every time we were going, the cardiologist was saying, oh, you don't need to do it yet. It's okay, because if the heart's kind of working okay for now, we don't disturb a heart that's kind of working okay. We need it to get to a point where, oh, we leave it any further, it could deteriorate, and that's when we do it. So as he got past the 6 month mark, I was happy, because he's very much more of a bouncing baby when you're 6 months old. So I could see he was progressing and getting a bit stronger. And then time went on, he got to 12 months old, still didn't have to have it. But at the same time, we had to be very careful of shielding him to make sure he didn't get like any ailments, any bugs and whatever, because he could get called for surgery at any time. But thankfully, we did get to 18 months before he had to have a surgery, which was still very scary, because as soon as you do get that call of, okay, we're ready for him, it got cancelled 2 times. It wasn't until the 3rd time. So you get yourself ready and you're like, okay, we've got to go through this. And then you get a phone call saying, sorry, ICU's too full, so we can't do the surgery. And that happened twice. And I've got to say, Gemma, at that time, I was pulling my hair out. I was a different person. I kind of came off social media. I barely answered my phone. I didn't want to pretend to be like, hi, yeah, I'm okay, when, you know, my son was going to be having this major surgery. And it was like nearly 3 months from the time when they said, okay, he's ready to have it, until he did have it, because it was around the end of the year, November, December. So unfortunately, kids do get quite ill at that time and do need ICU. And I had to just find solace in they're looking after other kids who really need the ICU. And so, you know, Theo's surgery is just going to have to wait, and I'm not going to try and be selfish about that. Or what about me? It's like, well, you know, ICU's full because these kids really need it.
I don't know how I would have coped in that situation. Obviously, you just do because you have to. But I think it's one thing knowing that he needs the surgery, but it must have been really hard not knowing when.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the longer it goes, like you said, you know, it obviously means that's good. Like, his heart's working enough that they aren't saying, right, he needs it now. But that must have been really tough on you to kind of have that hanging over you, but not know when it was going to happen.
It was the toughest thing ever. And I think at that point in time, gosh, sorry, we've got a siren in the background. I think at that point in time, I kind of compartmentalized things in my brain. And I think this is probably where I'm going to go further in the story of how you realize trauma affects you. Because even though you plod on with your day, and you know, when your child's really small, like when they have had a diagnosis of Down syndrome, there's lots of clinics there in the hospital. So you're always doing physio and obviously for Theo heart and stuff. So I had to just plod on. So I had to have that persona of Sam, who's just like a new mum and has to just get on with doing things for her son and his possible medical conditions. And then there's this other absolutely petrified person that I kind of hid in a box in the back of my mind, who kind of retreated from my normal, you know, how my normal society or life was, because this was on my head. I just felt like I didn't have the bandwidth for anything more. And that meant like fun and games and socializing. Like, I just didn't do it as much, because as that time was nearing, I just didn't have the capacity for it. I needed to just be as strong as possible to get on with the normal daily, you can say mundane things of just like being a mum.
And in that time, how much was the kind of Down syndrome playing a part in that? And I don't mean in a day-to-day way, I mean in your head, because I have experienced being told that my baby has Down syndrome, and it was postnatally. Now, I didn't have any indicators that that was going to be the case, because I had excess fluid. I think we were in double figures for scans by the time Leo was born. So, and nothing, like you said, those markers, and they do check for everything when they're scanning, you know, as much as it's like, oh, we can find out what, you know, what the gender is. They're medical scans. That's what they're there for, to check if there's issues and what's going on. So I had no idea, but I having, you know, have had that thing of a doctor saying your baby has Down syndrome, but that was all it was.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have this medical thing as well. And they are different things because obviously Theo's heart condition is a very medical thing. Yeah. Down syndrome, although, yes, it can come with medical complications, Down syndrome isn't a medical issue. It's something else. So how did that kind of play into it with you?
That's a really interesting question because now, knowing I was going to come and talk to you, I've kind of thought back to that time and I realized that it really played secondary role, Down syndrome. Like even when I got told 3 days later, you know, we were in the hospital, we were in the hospital for about 10 days after Theo was born, and when the consultant came in and said, oh, we've done the test and yeah, he does have Down syndrome, I remember going, yeah, okay. And I think my mum was looking at me at that point in time just thinking, oh, you've taken that information well. But I was consumed by the fact he had a hole in his heart. Yeah. I'm being consumed about that, you know, so I wasn't seeing. And then also as he was developing, I was in awe of the fact that he's got this hole in his heart, which kind of deoxygenates his body. So he should be, so he's tired a lot of the time, was always tired. And nurses have to come around every week and check his oxygen levels and stuff like that. But he was still getting up and kind of doing tummy time and rolling when he was, you know, meant to, as we say, roll, and, you know, trying to crawl and move around. He was doing all those things and reaching milestones quite well. So I was like, this baby's amazing. Like, what does Down syndrome really mean then? Because, you know, the kind of things that I got told were going to be difficult for him weren't difficult for him. It was just that he always seemed to be very exhausted after doing those things. So it wasn't until, I think, after he had his surgery, and then I could see where he was kind of more so developmentally, because at 21, 22 months after he'd recovered, that's when you realise, oh, okay, yeah, you know, children are meant to possibly be speaking at this time, or probably would have been walking for 12 months. But my son also had a heart condition, which was stopping him from having the energy to do certain things. So it didn't concern me that he wasn't walking. It wasn't really attributed to Down syndrome as much as the heart. And we couldn't tell where those two things met until I spoke to a pediatrician, and she was like, well, you know, a lot of the time children with Down syndrome can have poor muscle tone, but Theo's core seemed to be very strong. So he was doing certain things, the things that I'm telling you that he was doing quite well at that time. So I didn't know then where that intersection of medical and, you know, having this diagnosis of Down syndrome kind of met. It wasn't until, I'd say, getting towards 2 years old that I started to see that, and it really around not long after before I met you, and I started to see how then it took its toll. Because I'm not going to lie, at the same time after I did find out and I was still in the hospital, when it did dawn on me, oh wow, he's got Down syndrome, I did start thinking of those things like that he wouldn't be able to do from what I'd been told, you know, and what I'd learned through my time. Because like I say, I am in my 40s, I grew up as a child in the 80s, and we didn't know anything about people with disabilities, like
nothing.
Saw one person, you know, we used to go to church, and there was one person in the church who had cerebral palsy, I remember, but he was there every week, and I just thought that was amazing, you know, you think of things, very ableist thoughts kind of thing, but never really knew anyone with Down syndrome until I remembered that, you know, I used to have a shop. Because, you know, I'm self-employed. I used to have a shop when I lived in London for 10 years. And there was this lovely woman who lived in Brixton who used to come through the shop with her son who had Down syndrome. And at that point in time, when I first met them, I didn't even know he had Down syndrome. She just told me, because when we used to say hello to him, his name was Joseph, gorgeous little boy. Hi, Joseph. She was like, oh, we can't hear you because he is like, couldn't remember if he's profoundly deaf or partially deaf. So that's just all I took it as, this little gorgeous little blonde boy with blue glasses on. And it wasn't until I started to speak to his mum more, she told me, oh, part of his hearing loss is attributed to the fact he's got Down syndrome. So I was looking at, little kids are just cute anyway. So it wasn't anything that I was like, oh, let me look at his features and see if there's anything particular. I just saw this cute little boy who would gesture to us as much as possible. But I learned about Down syndrome through her, but she was originally from New Zealand and moved back to New Zealand, and I've reconnected with her recently, which is amazing.
Aww.
Joseph is a teenager now. And I was like, oh gosh, yeah, Joseph is the only person I ever met with Down syndrome, and I adored him and he adored me. And when I remembered that when Theo was a toddler, I was like, oh gosh, like, what does it actually mean? Like, he was just a gorgeous little boy. And that's what I'm seeing with my son. He's just a gorgeous little boy. That's what I have to keep in my mind. But at the same time, Gemma, I feel like I was shielded from what I could have been thinking and the depths I could have gone into about, oh my gosh, my son's got Down syndrome because he had a heart condition. So now I'm like, is that kind of like a blessing or a lucky thing in a way? But obviously a heart condition isn't, but I know sometimes you do go down those roads of, oh, will he have this and will he be able to do that? Will he ever be able to drive? Stupid things like that. Will he ever
think about that?
Or get married? Will I ever be a grandparent? I was making loads of things about how I would feel, but then I was thinking, Sam, you're already an older mother anyway, so that's not something that you need to be making a concern right now. But it was things like, what will he have in life and will he be able to look at himself? And you start going down that road and you do feel a bit sad, but then I'd end up getting distracted again by the fact that he's got a heart condition or he's just had a heart surgery. And we spent 3 weeks in ICU and I was staying at a Ronald McDonald House. Like, life was mad. So couldn't get consumed by that.
It's interesting that you say that because I was consumed by it, like 100%. Like, I went to those depths and stayed there for quite a while. But thinking now, knowing what I know now, like, there are so many things that are much, much worse. I don't know if that's the right phrase to use, but well, let's go there. So much worse than Down syndrome. But at the time, I was like, nothing is worse than this. This is the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst. But it's interesting you saying that because I didn't have anything worse to worry about.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what goes back to, like, you know, meet one person with Down syndrome and you've met one person with Down syndrome. And our experiences, even though they are very similar in the way we both have sons with Down syndrome, I've got to be honest, if I took away the fact that he had a heart condition, I might have very much been the way you were. And it might have been a difficult one to process for a longer time. I feel like I never got the opportunity to process it. I think that's what it is. That's helped me. That's kind of helped in a way to accept it.
Yeah, but I think it will have done because I think when you get, I can only speak for my own experience here, but I think when you get a diagnosis of Down syndrome, the majority of the time, it is, if it's a postnatal, well, either way, the majority of the time, you either know already when your baby's born, or it is within the first few days that it, something is flagged that it might be different. Now, I do know that there are people, and I have a friend who their diagnosis was much later, actually, months later. But in the main, you either know when your baby's born or you know very soon after. And I think that until your baby starts to do things and you start to see their personality, you can't see that it will be okay unless you already have a lived experience of somebody with Down syndrome, which I'm the same as you, Sam. I didn't. I don't actually think I'd ever met anybody with Down syndrome. So you talking about growing up in the 80s, my head was just full of stereotypical ideas of what Down syndrome meant, what it looked like, and what it would mean for his future. And all of those were dreadful in my head. So I think when you're holding this tiny baby, and I've mentioned this before, and people are kind of trying to say the right thing, and they're going, no, 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 well, yeah, he'll walk, he'll talk, of course, of course, of course. And you're like, but what if he doesn't? Yeah. Like, I'm holding a five-day-old baby, you know, you have no idea what the future looks like. And I suppose you almost bypassed that bit. And by the time you knew that medically he was going to be okay, you could already see who he was. And like you said, he was hitting those physical milestones. So you're not going to have to go, okay, well, what if he can't walk? And obviously, you know, if your child doesn't walk, then you deal with that. But when you're thinking they might not, that doesn't feel like a good thing to think, obviously.
Of course. And, you know, we know Google can be absolutely terrible, and especially with how something like Wikipedia describes Down syndrome. If you go down those rabbit holes, oh my gosh, you're just in despair, aren't you? You just feel like there's going to be nothing that's going to be good out of having this child with Down syndrome until, like you say, you get to know their personality. I would say now that Theo is older, I'm starting to see more of the challenges, because we, like you say, we've got past some of those medical things, even though he still has got some medical issues, because unfortunately off the back of having open heart surgery, he got a kidney injury, which has now resulted in him having like chronic kidney disease. So we've really got to keep an eye on his kidneys and make sure we can try and keep them in check as much as possible. But on the whole, how he operates on a day to day, you know, he's healthy, you know, that you can see. Like, but then you start to see the things that come. It's like he got diagnosed with celiac disease, and you know, I think it's about 40% of people with Down syndrome do have that diagnosis. So there's these things that I was just like, oh, okay, is Theo more prone to these things because he has Down syndrome? Was it because he had Down syndrome, now he's got a kidney injury, because that's probably why his heart didn't form in the right way in the first place? You start looking back at those things. But then now when we think of like developmentally, when it comes to, you know, having an intellectual or learning disability, I'm starting to see those things with Theo now. Like when he was a baby, he would say a few words, all the B words like bus and brick and ball. He would say those pretty much around between 1 and 18 months old. And then after he recovered from his surgery and was the toddler who was literally running up and down the living room, and I couldn't believe it. It was like, wow, the surgery transformed him. You would not know there was a child in the house. He was completely silent. And that really struck me. I was like, oh, there's no loud Theo. He always used to make loads of loud screamy noises if he wasn't trying to say words. I can count how many times on my hand he said mum to me. He hadn't really called me mum. And so that's when I spoke to the paediatrician. He was about 2 years old then, and she was like concerned that he'd lost certain words and he didn't really respond to his name. He'd started to kind of, you call his name and he just doesn't answer you. So she didn't want to really put anything on that at that point in time. But as another year has gone by, then he's gotten put on the ASD pathway. And I don't know how long that's going to take to even get a diagnosis, which is the thing now where I'm experiencing it a bit more the way you did when having Leo, in terms of, oh gosh, okay. The limited stuff I know about autism is way more than what I knew about Down syndrome, which means I'm a bit more informed and I wouldn't be thinking, oh, you can't do this or you'll never do that, because again, we all know it's a spectrum. But I am kind of going down rabbit holes a little bit, because I've never really been called mum, and I'm wondering, will my son ever go, mum, look at this, or mum? He's very much nonverbal, but he's very aware of everything that's going on around him. But sometimes he gets really overwhelmed because he can't communicate. So there's a lot of things there that are in my mind now when I'm thinking about his future, like, oh, is he going to be able to do this? And is he going to be able to look after himself here and there? Like, we're doing toilet training and it's like 2 steps forward, 10 steps back. And I don't know if that's because of Down syndrome, and I don't know if that's just because he's a little boy, because sometimes you do get told it's harder for boys than it is for girls. But then we make loads of strides. Like in the last week, he's been dry every night. Like, he hasn't, you know, he's just woke up with a dry nappy. And it's like, I think that big thing about what you think development's going to be in a child seems very linear. And that's the thing that kind of, you know, throws us, because it's like, if we can't kind of see even a hazy linear path, it's absolutely scary. It's just so, so scary. But then I think as time goes on, I'm really trying to appreciate the windy road. that's the windy road of development now, where the twists and turns and goes backwards sometimes and then goes forward. I'm trying to be on board that bus that says that's okay, because otherwise you start making yourself go a little insane by wondering what's the future going to hold.
You kind of have to do that, don't you? You have to reframe, because if you don't do that, then everything's bad. Every setback is going to be the worst thing in the world. And I do think you have to go through that. You have to let yourself have that and then go, okay, enough.
100%, 100%. And it doesn't mean it's not going to happen again, because you just find instances where it's going to happen again. Like, oh, like I'm just saying, you know, we literally just had a hospital appointment last week and Theo's kidney function is reduced again. So now he's like at a chronic kidney disease level, stage 3, which means you've only got about 50% of your kidney function. And so I started just spiraling this weekend, like, oh my God, if he's only 4 years old and he's got 50%, like, what's that going to mean? Like, you start really having horrible, dark thoughts, you know, of how he's going to cope and how long's his life going to be. And I don't want to think those things. So then you've got to put that. It's so much energy, Gemma, where everything, I've got to compartmentalize things. And I think that's what I've resonated with so much with a lot of the other mums who've spoken on your podcast, is how much energy it has to take for you to just get through the day to day, because you really have got to put certain things aside in your mind so you can get through the day to day. But then your child just does something awesome that's just so regular, and you know, it's just a little regular thing, like, you know, picking up a cup and drinking it and it doesn't necessarily spill everywhere, or finishing all his dinner, you know, just little silly things like that. And then you're just happy and excited again, and those things aren't in your head again until you have to be like, until you get a message on your phone or a letter come through the door, oh, you know, you need to go to Alderhay for this. And then it's like, oh gosh, you suck up all that, you know, you suck it all up again, and then go, here we go, there's that roller coaster ride. You don't know where it's going to go. Is it going to be good news or bad news? But then in the same vein with his heart, like, you want to get to a point where when you have got a heart condition, you're a lifelong cardiac patient, but going from like monthly appointments to 2 monthly appointments, 3 monthly appointments, 6 monthly appointments, you want to get told you don't have to come back till next year. And at the beginning of the year, that's what we got told. So with Theo's heart, it's working quite well. And the repair that they did, which was a massive repair, is growing with him, which is amazing. Because you get told children with tetralogy of Fallot, if they didn't have a heart repair, might not survive past 5 years old, because the heart just doesn't have the capacity. So knowing that there's that medical care out there, where I see, it's very difficult for me to keep up with my son. He can run away with me and I'll be out of breath trying to catch him, you know? So I'm very, 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 very grateful for that. And I just try and the juxtaposition between the really rubbish days and then being very grateful for those days is a massive, massive gulf in between. But you've got to put yourself in two different mindsets a lot of the time. And then I've gotten to this stage now when it's school time, and that's a whole nother story and ball game.
So before we get on to school, I don't think I know your timeline of this. And I'm not going to go into the reasons why, because I know that you don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. So although you have a super supportive family, and you've told me some lovely stories about your family, in terms of a partner, you are doing this on your own, aren't you? Yes, and exactly. Has that been from the beginning?
It has been from the very, very beginning. And that was, you know, like I say, I was living in London, but I moved back home to Liverpool. So I would have the support of my family, because me and Theo's dad weren't together. So I knew from the get-go that I was going to be doing this alone. I didn't realise it was going to be completely alone, but unfortunately, that's how it's turned out. And so that was another thing that I've picked up from your podcast, is I hear the stories, and then I will always hear that there's a partner or a husband attached to the same mum that's speaking. And I'm like, wow, that's where, even though we've got very similar stories, that's where mine kind of verges off differently, because I'm doing this on my own. And that was a big reason why I did want to come on and talk as well, because I'm not too sure how many other mums are out there who are single mums doing it on their own. And when we're talking about the things that go through our minds and the things that we worry about, it's like having a partner you can bounce off. Not to say your partner's sweetness and light all the time, because we know that's a deadly case, but you know, you are meant to be each other's support system, and being able to bounce off someone who shares those similar feelings just can help take the edge off. It doesn't make it 100% better, but it helps take the edge off. But I'm realizing not having that does add to the struggle, because being Theo's parent, I'm the only person who's Theo's parent in this situation. So even though he's got family who absolutely adore him, my brothers live here in Liverpool, my sister still lives in London, but she's a massive part of, you know, her nephew's life and her other nephew's lives. I've got an amazing support system, amazing family. But the shoes of the parents of Theo are only my shoes, like, to fill. So everyone obviously cares and worries about him so, so much. But it's like all the things when it comes to, oh, I've got to sign off for this surgery, and I've got to decide if he should take this drug or not, all lands on me. And that's really tough.
Full respect to you as a single mum. You know, I've been a single mum before with my older children. So my husband Ben is stepdad to my older children. And I was, so they were 50-50 between me and their dad when I was on my own. So I haven't, yes, although I was a single mum, I wasn't a single mum like some people are, because you have Theo all of the time. I haven't been in that situation. My children who are older don't have additional needs. And I still felt that really hard. So, you know, full respect to you, because I think the responsibility, and it's not even necessarily the day to day, although that is exhausting, but I think that responsibility and knowing that it stops with you is a lot. Mm-hmm. And then you add that on top as well. You know, I just can't imagine going through something like the heart surgery and getting the diagnosis along the way that you've got for Theo, and not having that person. And, you know, I've been there, you know, with the family and the friends, but it isn't the same, is it? It isn't the same as having that person at night to go to bed with and then go, God, that was a tough day, wasn't it?
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think it's important to recognize that you are doing that on your own, and that is a lot. Although I've said before, and I will say again, I'd be really interested to know what the stats are for people who do have a baby together, get a diagnosis, whatever that is, and then break up, because it is such a strain on a relationship. And I've had multiple women on this podcast who started this send parenting journey with a partner and now are not with said partner, because I think something like a life-changing diagnosis, whatever that is, whether that is, you know, an intellectual disability, a physical disability, whether it's a heart condition or something that's very medical, I feel like that either brings you closer together, which I am very, count myself extremely lucky that that's what happened with me and my husband, but I can totally see that it would do the opposite.
Yeah. And I've garnered that from your podcast as well. And I'm happy to hear that some of these women have found another amazing partner after But then I also do know a few people, you know, within our community, not necessarily based in the UK, who are not with their partners, husbands anymore. And it's, and I don't know the full story, but you've got to acknowledge that the strain of having a child with a disability, you know, can put a lot of strain on a relationship. And it's quite sad, but it's, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is one of my lines at the moment, like, that I just live through in life, because it's like, you just got to accept certain things. And I think I've always regarded myself as someone who can take care of myself, not like necessarily waving the flag of I am a strong woman, but yeah, in a way, you know.
You are.
Thank you. But it's also brought me to a realization of just how amazing and how hard motherhood is anyway, regardless of child with a disability or not. So I've got, like, so much respect, utter respect for all parents, not just mums and dads, and how much you have to kind of, it's so self-sacrificing to be a parent. And then so when your child does have extra needs, like, you know, I see it with my siblings all the time, because they've got typical children, and they always tell me how much of an amazing mum I am, and, you know, how Theo's got the best mum in the world and all that kind of stuff. And it's lovely. But I also realise, I had a friend, a very, very dear friend, not had, she still is a very dear friend, whose mum had a stroke later on in life, who she cared for. And I used to see how she literally put her whole life to the side so she could look after her mum, because her mum was an amazing person. And we were only very young, in our 20s at that time. And I used to say to her, gosh, I don't know how you do it. Like, you had these hopes and dreams, and now you're just back home caring for your mum. And she was like, Sam, if it was you, you'd do it. I know you. We've known each other for a long time. If you got put in that situation, you would do the same as me. And I was like, wow, would I? You question yourself in a way. And then 20 years later, which it is, it's like I become a mum of a child with special needs. And she's the first person on the phone just saying, remember when you used to ask me, how do I do it? You see the love that you have for your child, who is absolutely gorgeous, you're just going to do it. And they were some of the best words that I heard when I first had Theo, because she was just like, now you are similarly in those shoes. There's someone who you love who's going to need possibly more care and attention than you thought. and you're not going to blink twice. You're just going to do it. And that's what's happened. And that's what it is. That's why when people go, oh, you know, parents with kids with special needs are, you know, superheroes or angels or whatever. It's just like, I'm the furthest thing I could be from an angel. The furthest thing you could be from an angel. I'm just somebody's mum and I love my child. So when you love your child, you just do everything that you can for them.
But can I say though, as your friend, you are a fantastic mum to Theo. And not just because you love him and you know, you meet all of his needs, but I don't know if I've ever said this to you, but I say it about you all the time. So my husband has never met you.
Yeah.
And when I say, oh, my friend Sam, I always describe you as somebody like you've really thrown yourself in to acquiring all this knowledge and understanding what Theo is entitled to and how things work. And I always say to Ben, I feel really lucky to have met you, firstly, because you're great, but also because you're slightly ahead on this journey. Like, I feel like you know everything about everything. Like, you know how the process is for this work and you know what this should be and what somebody should be saying to you about this. And if they're not saying that, then why aren't they saying that? And then this is what you do after that. And you didn't have to do that. You could have just, you have gone way further with the information and the knowledge than I have, because you're somebody that I know I can text and go, oh, this has happened. Like, and I know that you'll send me a really long voice note back going, right, well, this is what you do. These are your next steps. And I feel really grateful to have somebody like that in my life that I know that I can turn to for knowledge.
Always. And you know what? I don't feel like I do know it all. I have acquired a lot of knowledge. I know that's true, but that's testament to, you know, organizations like PADS. The same with me. Parents that have come before me that I've met through PADS or met through social media, who've just been as open, and we've become friends off the back of that. Again, just because we actually like each other a lot. Our children just both have Down syndrome. And, you know, I've really got to shout out my friend, Ashley. Ashley, I know you listen to this podcast. She loves your podcast. And she's one of those mums who did what you're saying I do for you, she does for me. And even though she's got a very busy life as well, having a child with Down syndrome means there's a lot you've got to juggle, as well as having a job and raising your, you know, raising your family. And
keeping everyone alive.
She always has time for me. She'll always send me a lovely encouraging text. I can tell her what's going on and she'll say, well, this is what you need to do. This is how you go through a tribunal. This is what you need to make sure you're looking for when you're looking for the nursery or the school. She's been brilliant. So that's the reason why I want to shout her out today. And I always said, you know, if I can help anyone like the way someone like Ashley's helped me, I will do it. And then I've thankfully met someone in Liverpool in my hometown who I love dearly. Love you, Gem. And we're going through a similar journey. So yeah, any help I can be. And I made sure, you know, Theo goes to a nursery school. So I'm a governor now at his school because I wanted to make sure I could learn as much as I could, give back as much as I could. And, you know, I'm the SEN governor there. So I wanted to use my, you know, everyday knowledge of having a child with SEN to just help things within the school. That school is brilliant where he goes to. But it's like any bits of knowledge that you can acquire, it just helps keep your mind at rest as well. Sometimes it can go either way. Like, you don't want to run down the rabbit holes, but if you've got good qualified information from, you know, a reputable source, then yeah, the best thing you can ever do is to share it when this person who's come behind you needs it.
Definitely. But I feel like for Theo, I feel like you're really going above and beyond. And I think that's amazing. Yeah. And I always think that about you. But what you've just described there is something that is so lovely about this community, isn't it? Like that everybody, or certainly everybody that I know, either in real life or on Instagram, wants to pay it forwards like that. And I always think, you know, there were so many accounts. So if we're just talking about social media now, there were so many accounts that helped me in those early days. And one of them is Amy, who runs Remy's Instagram account. And that Insta, so I'm going to give her a shout. She's been on the podcast before and I love that episode. That account was a really helpful thing for me at the beginning to go, okay, they look like they're having a nice time. maybe life isn't dreadful. And there were a few others as well at the beginning that I really clung on to. Because I was like, their life looks like what I want my life to be with my child with Down syndrome. It always really touches my heart when I get messages from people going, oh, I'm so glad I found your account because it's really helped me. And I've recently had a baby with Down syndrome and the content that you're sharing has really helped me. And that always makes me feel lovely. I guess that's my way and hopefully the podcast of paying it forwards.
Oh gosh, it's not hopefully, it's 100% definitely. When it comes to the podcast. But I really do admire that about you as well, because you really do, you know, your social media page is, you know, full of all the things that you do in your life and yeah. work and whatever. And that's just nice to see how your life is. It's not primarily about Leo, but we always get to see the lovely bits about Leo. And I love that because social media has helped me so much to get through certain things, the Down syndrome community, the SEND community in general. I'm starting to realise now, even though Theo doesn't have a diagnosis yet of autism, there's so many things I've learned from people's pages with autism yeah. that I've realized, okay, Theo does display a lot of those traits, and then a lot of children with Down syndrome that I know don't. So there's a lot of things about Theo now that I'm realizing, oh, they could be because he is autistic rather than the fact it's because he has Down syndrome. But that was a side note. What I did want to say about your social media, I'm not a big social media person. I am on it and I try and post things. Even I am self-employed, like I say, so I've got a business and I'm really terrible with that as well. I don't post enough on that. So I really do admire when I'm seeing
you go through spurts.
I go through spurts, you've noticed. But you know, pages like yours, you do and stuff like that is amazing because it's so helpful. And I'm hoping I can get to a point where I can do something similar. But I just like, I've just got the most kind of slowest pace when it comes to posting and things. But yeah, social media has been brilliant. And, you know, the Ashley who I was talking about before, I met her through Instagram. So, but now we actually do see each other in real life when we can. So that's been really, 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 really good.
Let's talk about the schools. So Theo is going to be the year above my Leo in terms of school admission. So you, I don't know when this podcast will go out, but the process is quite recent, isn't it? So you found out what school Theo had been offered.
Yeah.
And well, you tell the story.
Okay. Yeah. So Theo is technically nearly 2 years older than your Leo. But I deferred him. So he will only be a school year ahead of Leo now. But I deferred him last year when he could have gone to school because I didn't think he was ready for school. And then I hoped that he would get a place at our local primary school or possibly in a special school. But it's just so oversubscribed. So we've come to this year and he's gotten a school that's like 10 miles away from where we live. Theo already finds it difficult to like stay awake at night. We've only just gotten into a good routine again. So to have to travel on.
Could I just interrupt there? Just for context though, we live in a city. So for somebody who lives in the countryside, 10 miles might be fine. But this is like you're talking about driving through a major city in rush hour.
Yeah. And it's like gotta do it there, gotta do it back, then gotta go and pick them up again. And the first thing people say is, oh, you know, but you know, they have that school transport. And I'm like, there's no way I could put Theo at this age on a school bus where, you know, he's not diagnosed, but he definitely does have pica. He puts everything in his mouth. He loves to find the dust in every little crevice you can find, and that might go in his mouth. And it's like, no, I would be having like heart palpitations the whole way knowing he's going to school. Plus they'd have to pick up 10 or so other kids along the way. It just makes his journey really long. So that just didn't sit well with me. I don't want to mention the school because it's not trying to be a reflection on the school, but I don't want to have to take my child across there. Plus it has a new SEND resource base, so it's not established yet. So I don't really want my son to be going somewhere where you're still finding your feet. So I was thinking of going through the appeal process to try and get, you know, a place in the schools where I wanted him to be. And then it just kind of dawned on me that I'm self-employed. I work for myself. I structure my day how I want to. My son's actually not quite ready for school. And I'm exhausted from having to have to always fight for things. I know people can say the opposite, you know, we've got to fight for this and we've got to fight for that. And like you were just saying, I do have a wealth of knowledge in things, but this was the one where I just thought, I don't really want to have to go in front of a judge and start appealing for a place for my son that he's probably not going to get, because I know how oversubscribed these schools are. And that's not me being pessimistic or, you know, being defeated.
It's just the reality, isn't it?
Reality. And I just wanted, I'm very much someone who wants to kind of hold my destiny in my hands as much as I can. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to home educate Theo. And I've got a couple of other friends and people that I know who with children with SEN who are going down their, that journey, and their children have come on leaps and bounds. Doesn't mean he'll always be home educated, but at this point in time, you know, he's still only four. So he should have gone to school last year, and he's still only four now. He won't be five until the end of July. And I just don't think he's ready for that. He's still only 50% toilet trained. I don't really want him to be somewhere in an environment and then maybe start going backwards because he feels dysregulated. You know, I just didn't want that. I didn't want that to be the case. So I thought, no, I'm going to keep him at home. I'm going to restructure my life so I can be there for him and help get him to the next stages where he needs to be developmentally, where he can kind of look after himself. Like, I know he can sit down. Theo barely uses cutlery. He still finds it difficult to use a cup. He's not confident with his hands at all. And I really just want to get him to that stage, knowing that I've been a major part of that and that he's not away from me for that major part of the day where he's learning those things. And his nursery are amazing. Like, they've done so much to help Theo. So I know that the right school setting can do the same. But unfortunately, where we are in Liverpool, it's very difficult. I know my son would need a special school place right now. He's very dysregulated in large spaces with loads of people. So a mainstream classroom, much as I love our local mainstream school, would not really be conducive for him at this stage. So I'm just trying to keep him home for that little bit longer, where hopefully, you know, in the next year or so, he might be able to be. Because he is still quite social, even though he doesn't love, like, you know, loud spaces and loads of people, but he still can be quite social. So I just want to get him to a point where he's a lot more confident, and then hopefully we can apply and get somewhere that will be beneficial for him.
Well, can I just say, I think you're incredible for making that decision, because as we've already spoken about, and as is obvious, when you give birth to a child with additional needs, at whatever point you find that out, as we've discussed, you just get on with it because you have to. You don't have to do this. This is you making a decision to do this. So well fucking done for even considering it. And especially since you are on your own, because that's a huge thing to go, right, I'm on my own and I'm going to take this on. And I just think that's absolutely incredible. And I'm extremely impressed by you for making that decision.
I was scared when I first made the decision. I was thinking, can I do this? But then the first thing I did was speak to my family, of course, speak to certain friends to make sure they help hold me accountable. It's like when you check in with me and say, Sammy, you're all right, really dig in and make sure I am. Because the last thing I want is to maybe be in a state of, oh my gosh, how am I doing this? I can't do this. It's me and Theo every day and, you know, I'm pulling my hair out. Hold me accountable, make sure I'm okay. Because at any point in time, if I do need to go get him in the school system, I will. I will not be a martyr to home education just because I want to stand on that hill. It's got to work for us both, you know, so.
Absolutely. And I think you're going into it with exactly the right mindset of, this is what I'm doing for now. You're not going, right, that's it, I'm home educating forever. And I think it's always great to go in with, okay, well, if I'm not okay with this, then I have the option to do this.
Yeah. Just stay open-minded. But, you know, my family have been supportive. You know, they've obviously asked the questions, are you sure you can do this? It's just like every day. It's every day and Monday, because, you know, being a parent, you go back into, you know, we can't lie. And I want to say this for the record, just because you're a parent of a child with special needs doesn't mean that child can't get on your nerves sometimes.
Oh, that God, no.
Your child, you know, don't ever think that it's like, oh, you know, they're just sweetness and light all the time. My Theo is gorgeous, but he can be a cheeky little so-and-so when he's ready. You know, he's a funny little boy. So I know we've got to make sure we've got time apart from each other, as well as all the time we're going to spend together. But we're going to be doing, and I've looked at all the things that he loves in life. Like, he loves the outdoors. He loves gardens and flowers and big spaces where he can run around. He likes, like, nature and animals. So we're going to make sure we spend a lot of time in those spaces so he can develop, you know, his confidence in the places and the thing and spaces that he loves. And then we'll just see how it goes from there.
But I think, as we've mentioned, you know, we live in a city, so there are so many resources available to you and so many places and so many free things as well that you can take him out to do. It's not like you're going to be sat on chairs in your house day in, day out. Obviously, there's a wealth of a different type of education that's available to you. And you know, like you said, go in open-minded, but you're saying, oh God, will I be able to do this? Well, you don't know until you try, do you?
Until you try. Exactly. So I'm going to see if I'm up for the task. Doesn't look one way. Education's got a lot of different facets to it.
Absolutely. This could be your calling in life. I can tell you with absolute certainty, it isn't mine, but it might be yours.
And it's good to know that, isn't it? It's good to know yourself in that way, because then
you have to.
Have to.
Leo's a bit different because he's got a different dad to my other two. So you often find if somebody, you know, gets a new partner, there's a big age gap, isn't there? If they go on to have another child, there is a 5-year age gap between my older children for a very specific reason, because I knew as a person that I didn't and still don't have the mental capacity to deal with two very small children at the same time. Like, I just know that that wouldn't be for me. And there was a point after Leo was born where I was like, because I'm same as you. I was 40 when I got pregnant and 41 when I had him, I think. And there was quite a long time where I was like, I don't feel like I'm done, but also I know I can't, like, because of my age, if biology was different, I would have another baby in 3 years and I'd be thrilled with myself. But unfortunately, I mean, for some people maybe, but that's not how life works. And that made me sad. I was like, oh God, he's my last. Because I loved being pregnant, although I was ill. I love newborn babies, but it's about knowing yourself and knowing what you have the capacity for. So knowing that, I absolutely know I just don't have the patience, and I know I wouldn't have the patience to homeschool either.
I know. We'll wait and see, hey Jen. I might need to have a second go on this podcast to tell you all about that. But he's in nursery school till July, and then I suppose from there, that's where it starts. And then we'll see how it goes. But I'm not going to stick to any kind of rigid ways of doing things, because I can see that's the total antithesis to who Theo is. He just wants to explore and be out there just feeling very free. And so we're going to visit every single garden space that we can in the UK. That's going to be our education. We're going to travel a lot. He likes to go to different places. He loves hotel rooms, which is hysterical. It's like first thing he wants to do.
Same, babe. Especially ones in hot countries.
So, you know, we'll try and travel as much as possible and things like that. We'll see how it goes, but he still needs to learn his ABCs and 1, 2, 3s. I'm actually quite excited.
I'm excited for you and to see where that journey takes you. I think it's incredible. But for somebody who might be listening to this thinking, actually, this is something that I need to look into, or it might work for my family. Like, just in terms of logistics, how does that work? Like, do you have to register that he is going to be homeschooled? Does it work differently because he has additional needs? Like, is there a curriculum you have to stick to? Like, do you know all of, I suppose you, I know you, you do know all of this.
But document.gov.uk that I've read, because I don't want to not know how it works. And there's no stipulated curriculum that you have to stick to when you do education. You can teach your child whatever. Of course, you've got to try and adhere to British values. But there's even something in there that says you don't have to teach your child British values. Like, it's not against the law not to. I don't know why anyone wouldn't want to be tolerant and all those kind of things that are
British. What does that mean by British values? What do they mean by that?
In law, there are stuff that's stipulated as British values. Like, you know, one of them is very much tolerance and acceptance and things like that. You know, the right to have your own religion and all these different kinds of things.
Okay.
Which, if you go to school, you learn that by proxy, but you don't have to teach that in the home, which I thought was astonishing that they actually say, actually written down that they say that. Of course, I will be teaching that because you want your child to accept everyone for who they are. But But yeah, you don't have to do GCSEs, you don't have to do A-levels, you don't have to learn in English and whatever. It's up to you. Once you go down the, it's called elective home education route, you don't call it homeschooling. Homeschooling is not what it's recognised as. It's home education. You pretty much teach your child what you think is right for your child. So for me, I know it's going to be things like, let's plant some tomatoes and watch them grow. And, you know, let's see how this space looks in the winter compared to the summer. Like I say, Theo has difficulty with his hands, so he doesn't love drawing and painting and mark making. He struggles a lot and gets really upset when you try and make him hold a crayon or whatever. So I know that's going to be a struggle, but we're going to work on things like that, of course. But that's not a be all and end all. I want him just to know about things in life that are going to help him be a well-rounded person as he gets older.
The way you've just described that, though, literally sounds perfect for a child that wouldn't thrive in a classroom environment, doesn't it? Like if you, I don't mean you, I mean everyone, if you have the capacity to home educate, like you can tailor that exactly to your child's needs. And I can see how a child would absolutely thrive in that environment over being in quite a rigid school system that might be detrimental to them.
And it's very important for the child to be around other children, of course, like so they just know how it is to be in society. But then also I look at my son, who's very insular, sometimes can't even stand being around his family. I'll be honest, he likes to just, when it gets a bit rowdy in our house, because there's 12 of us when we're all there together, say, for example, he wants to run out the room and just go somewhere quiet. So yeah. There's levels to it where sometimes he will not let go of his cousins. Thankfully, he's got cousins who are, you know, 5 and 2, not far away from his age. So when they're playing, he'll be watching them sometimes, doesn't want to get involved. And then all of a sudden, he wants to be involved with them. And I'm seeing that as time goes on. So I know that taking them to places where he can interact with other children, and there's loads of that within the home education environment. There's home, there's groups that you can be on WhatsApp and on other parts of social media, so you can make sure you're in groups with people where you can do and a lot of special schools do age stage rather than age, so a lot of the time you are going to be mixing with kids if your child does need special education that are different ages. So it'll be the same when you're doing homeschooling. You won't necessarily just be around all the 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds. There'll be older kids, there'll be younger kids.
It sounds incredible. And if when it gets to, you know, Leo's time to go to school, if I don't have the positive experience that I'm hoping for, I'll be asking for your admissions policy to Sam's Home Education.
You never know, you know, Gemma. I'm not going to say things like that haven't not crossed my mind, because I do love being around children. I love being able to just be that silly person sometimes, but they also know I can be like, hey, now it's ready to tidy up and now it's ready to do this. So see how it goes. You never know.
There's a bit of the trunch pull in you. Sam, as you know, I finish the podcast with the same 2 questions every time, and I still have to read them off my notes, which is absolutely ridiculous. The first one is, what do you know now that you wish you'd known? Well, I suppose at the beginning of your journey with Theo.
Gosh, it's such a funny one, because I've listened to your podcast and know I'm going to get this question, but I was just like, the thing that I really wish I knew, and I'm quite grateful to the parent who told me this from social media, was, don't think that all development's going to be linear. It's not a straight road. As soon as you embrace that, you'll be okay with how you see things happen. Because the whole kind of 2 steps forward, 10 steps back that can happen sometimes can be heartbreaking. But every time I remember I was told that, it just helps digest it a little bit better.
And what's the best piece of advice you've been given? Or is it that?
Yeah, it probably is that, to be honest. It probably is that, because they're the things that can help, that can make you spiral if you don't remember that, no, he's going to get there. Because, you know, I'll be there. Theo can be dry a whole week, and then the next week he's coming back, you know, from nursery with bags of wet clothes. And it's just like, oh. But then it's like, no, he goes on his own roundabout journey. And that can take as long as it's going to take. It's not because he's 4 now, it means he's got to be completely in pants. That's not Theo's journey. And with a lot of children with special needs, that's just not our journey. We're on a road less travelled, but it's an interesting one. And that's the way I've chosen to view it rather than be kind of consumed by it.
And that's perfect. Sam, I've really loved, I mean, I love chatting to you anyway, but I love that you've been on the podcast and I really appreciate you taking the time to do it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Like, your podcast has inspired me to come on here. So thank you so much.
Oh, that was so nice having Sam on. And I've actually wanted her on for ages, but it's always a weird one going to people who are actually your friends in real life. Oh, do you want to come on my podcast? So I kind of hadn't mentioned it. And then we both brought it up at the same time. And she'd kind of said, I wasn't ready before, but I think I am now. And I'm absolutely delighted that she's come on because, well, firstly, she's my friend and I think she's great. But I think the way that she speaks about everything so eloquently. And I just love how much she's thrown herself into not necessarily the Send community, although she has, but that's not what I mean. Just this information gathering and the fact that she's, you know, the Send governor. I've probably said that the wrong way, but do you know what I mean? And I think she's really going above and beyond for Theo. And I am eternally impressed that she's going to home educate him, even if she only does it for a week. Like, wow, that's so impressive to me. So I hope you enjoyed listening to Sam this week. I'm sure you did. And that's it for another episode. So as always, I'd love you to give me a follow on Instagram if you aren't already. I am at the Send Mum Club. You can message with thoughts on the episode. You can message me if you'd like to come on the podcast, if you've got somebody else who you think would be a great guest. If you can rate and review on your podcast app, I would love that as well. And I will see you back here next time.